Why does Sam Altman, CEO of OpenAI ChatGPT, carries a blue backpack everywhere he goes? Hear me out. To carry his stuff. Okay, I'm back. What happened while I was gone? Today, we're going to look at the last 1.5 months of AI development. Had to take a bit of a break. Everything well now. Let's go. The probably biggest thing that happened is the introduction of Llama 2. Meta released a successor to the Llama model that is upgraded. So it's been pre-trained on 2 trillion tokens. It has a context length that's double the context length of the last Llama model, and it exists in various sizes, 7, 13, and 70 billion parameters. Although there is a 30-ish, 35-ish billion parameter model that has not been released yet, because they say they hadn't had sufficient time to red team and explore its safety. Most notably, Llama 2 is commercially friendly licensed. So it's not open source, it's not non-commercial, it's something strange. So Yann LeCun tweeted this out. Llama V2 is open source with a license that authorizes commercial use. This is going to change the landscape of the LLM market, yada, yada, yada. And I have to say, it's not open source. I would plead with people to stop using this term unless something actually conforms with open source specifications, which this model doesn't. You're not free to use it for whatever you want. In fact, the license says you're free to use the model commercially up to a limit of 700 million users, meaning monthly active users. So essentially, you can use it if you're doing like a small scale operation, but as soon as you get to 700 million monthly active users, you'll have to go to Meta and ask them for permission, or they ask you for money, or they can just deny it. Hello there, it's Yannick from the future. I was just cross-checking if I got this license actually right, and I think I made a mistake reading it the first time. And I also feel a lot of other people also didn't read it as accurately. So let's correct that right now. The license says, if on the Llama 2 version release date, the monthly active users of the products or services made available by or for licensee or licensee's affiliates is greater than 700 million monthly active users in the preceding calendar month, you must request a license from Meta, which Meta may grant you or not, or yada, yada, yada. The crucial part being, it says, on the Llama 2 version release date. So the Llama 2 version release date is defined up here somewhere as July 18th, 2023. So in this case, only already existing services or products with this many users would not be allowed to use Llama without going to Meta. Now, while I still think that's kind of crappy, essentially it says like anyone can use it except, you know, you, Telegram and Google, or and other, like, it's still kind of crappy, and it's absolutely against the spirit of open source. And I think they could still achieve their mission of fueling research and stifling OpenAI by just fully releasing it. I'm going to make some claims here in this video that are then less valid. I'm going to say, for example, well, if you have a startup and the startup grows and builds upon Llama 2 and reaches 700 million users, you're essentially in danger of Meta cutting you off. According to, as the way I understand the license, this is not the case. What is the case is that you probably wouldn't want to remain at Llama 2. You probably would want to build upon future versions as well, and is quite conceivable that if Meta goes this right now, that future versions will also have this thing in. On the other hand, what does it mean? The products or services made available by or for licensee. Like, what does that mean? In what way? Like, if you're a provider of a Telegram plugin, and Telegram has X many users, but your plugin doesn't yet, or... like, there's all these kinds of questions, and I feel still this is kind of crappy to a lot of, especially startups, who, yeah, future versions are going to be out of question, and even current versions, you're probably going to have to hire a lawyer or something in many cases. Well, in any case, I feel I wasn't super duper wrong, but I was at least a little bit wrong. So consider that. So it's not open source. And I know Yann LeCun has been one of the driving forces between Meta becoming the most open source or release friendly company there is, which 10 years ago, someone would have told you like Facebook Research was going to be the most open company there is. It would be absolute, you would laugh them out of the room, right? And Yann has been a driving force behind that. And from everything that I can estimate from the outside, there's been a lot of movement inside of this company to strive towards more openness. And that's absolutely laudable. That's really, really cool. Let's not use the word open source where they don't belong. The code is open, the model is available, but it's not open source. You're not free to do whatever you want. That being said, Meta has also collected, let's say, supporting a cast, signatures of sort. Yann tweets, a number of personalities from industry and academia have endorsed our open source approach, which I find to be very interesting. So I pulled that up here. They have gone to people, various natures, academics, VCs, and so on, with this statement. We support an open innovation approach to AI. Responsible and open innovation gives us all a stake in the AI development process, bringing visibility, scrutiny, and trust to these technologies. Opening today's Llama models will let everyone benefit from this technology. And the list of signatories is long and notably includes VCs such as partners from Andreessen Horowitz, partners from other capitals, SV, like, so these are investors and VCs who somehow signed a statement in support for Meta's approach to licensing, which to me is super duper shady. So if you read this statement right here, notably, they leave away the part where it's like, hey, if you have more than 700 million users, you have to come to us. What I think is that the people here might not have been fully aware of what they were signing up for, essentially signing this statement right here. And now Meta is selling it as these people support our approach to licensing, which might be a bit shady. Now, it's totally possible they might have convinced all of these people. I have my doubts. With all of this, there's been a flurry of development around Llama 2. The community has picked it up and it's really cool to see that we get like an explosion of development around it. So Llama 2 accessory is an open source tool kit to do anything and everything with the Llama 2 model, fine tuning and so on. We have Together AI releasing long context sizes for Llama 2. So they extended the Llama 2 models for long context using position interpolation. OpenChat has new models based on Llama 2. LMSys released Vicuna models based on Llama 2. And they appear to be quite performant and much, much more. So a lot of people are now building on top of Llama 2, which is extremely, extremely cool. Notably, Llama 2 does not only come as a pre-trained language model, which you can fine-tune, but Meta has also made fine-tuned versions of that, including chat use cases in order to sort of chat with the model. So lots of bases of new developments. All right, next news. Google publishes on their blog a new partnership to promote responsible AI, saying that Google, Microsoft, OpenAI, and Anthropic are announcing the formation of the Frontier Model Forum, a new industry body focusing on ensuring safe and responsible development of frontier AI models. Frontier being, I guess, the new cool term for foundation models. I welcome the dismemberment of the term foundation models, but this, it's almost like ridiculous. First of all, Meta notably absent from this body. I don't know if whether by own choice or by exclusion, but having these companies make a, is essentially what they want to do is influence governments. They want to influence policymakers, academics, civil society, and so on. They want to make the laws to preserve their monopolistic status. It's so ridiculous that this builds the body of safe development of AI. It's like having Lord Voldemort in charge of the safe deployment of magic. It's just kind of backwards. And I don't doubt that there are people in all of these companies who are super well intended on the safe development of AI, but that's just not what's going to happen with an organization like this. We've already seen OpenAI doing their absolute best to essentially lobby policymakers to entrench their monopolistic status, and this is just going to be accelerating that. In better news, NASA and IBM openly release a geospatial AI foundation model for the NASA Earth observation data. So this is a foundation model that is fed with satellite imagery. And this can be used for all kinds of things, because now you can fine-tune that to do, let's say you want to predict how much forests grow or shrink or something like this. So this model will already have inherent capabilities in order to be fine-tuned for such a task. Think of it as a pre-trained ResNet that people have been using for all kinds of stuff, but just for satellite imagery. It's very cool, and it comes from obviously NASA's vast, extensive collection of satellite imagery data. And look at this, it's Apache licensed. Wow, people can do this, and I'm pretty sure no one has been hurt or harmed as of now by a better understanding of satellite imagery. It's really not that hard. And thank you, NASA. Thank you, IBM, for participating in this. Very cool. All right, we're gonna go a bit faster over some new models that have been released, some new big models, and we'll just touch a little bit what they are. All the links are in the description. Chameleon by Meta is a text-to-image and image-to-text model. So it is a pre-trained model that combines image and text in a two-way fashion. Although I don't think, or I haven't found them releasing any of the models. But it's still very cool what you can do with it. Visual question answering, all kinds of image editing. You can fine-tune it to do things. And the multimodal world in AI is progressing. And the same can be said about RT2, which is Google DeepMind's new model for robotics. So they previously investigated a lot into robotics models, including with their previous RT1 model. But what this does very well is it combines robotic data. So data from robots interacting with things and having instructions along with that, with data just scraped from the internet. And that gives the robots a much better understanding just of the world. So they mix internet scale VQA and robot data. And that mix enables a much better understanding, as I said. And it's also really nice to see that the advances of the other domains of machine learning, where we say, hey, we have all this unsupervised, essentially, data laying around. How about we learn a lot from that large volume of data, and then we mix in some targeted data, in this case, robotics instruction data, and get the best of both worlds. So these robots here are able to do extremely, let's say, tasks where you actually need to understand stuff, need to understand the scene and implicitly make some assumptions. They're very often good at doing things such as pick object that is different. It's a fairly high level and, let's say, abstract task, and by having that pre-training on large amounts of data and that language understanding and that visual understanding, the robots can actually perform that. Google Research releases MedPalm 2, which is a progression on their MedPalm paper. So this is a foundation, frontier, retrained, whatever model on medical data. Now, whatever the screeching horde of AI safety and ethics people might say, the vast majority of people in the medical field will welcome the help of such models. And the model is actually very, very good at certain tasks, obviously. Won't replace doctors, but it can pass medical exams, it can give suggestions for diagnoses or suggestions for all kinds of stuff. Here it's compared to physicians. Yellow bars are MedPalm. The blue bars, they go from the right, are humans, and in the middle there are ties. So, for example, omits more information in 5 to 10% of the cases that they've looked at. MedPalm omits more information than in, let's say, 60% of the cases the physicians omitted more information, and in the rest, the 30% of the cases in between here, both parties omitted about the same amount of information. So that's how you read these charts. And you can pretty much see that, at least obviously in the things that they've tested, MedPalm scores pretty well. So it's conceivable that in the near future, physicians will get a lot of helpful assistance from a medical models that have been either just pre-trained or fine-tuned on particular things. Especially for the people who think the louder they shout the word harm, the more they just get their way and get what they want. If you look at the bottom two things right here, greater extent of harm and greater likelihood of harm, physicians lead the pack well before Matt Palm. So I can definitely see the obvious risks in models, especially since if it's just one model, there it's still good to have, like, even if the physicians are kind of wrong more, if they're wrong in different ways, it might like equalize each other out a little bit. Whereas a model is much more likely to be wrong in a consistent direction all the time. But on average, in this case, in these cases, you'd rather have a physician with a model than a physician without one. They've also fine-tuned or extended these models to be multimodal. And for example, in this case, can you write me a report analyzing this chest x-ray? The model responds by actually looking at the picture. Again, multimodality coming in. Another release by Meta, the Open Catalyst demo, is accelerating catalyst discovery with AI. This is a more into the domain of chemistry. Catalysts are reactants that you add to a chemical reaction to make them faster or to make them happen in the first place. They usually lower the energy barrier, the initial energy barrier, to get a chemical reaction started and sustain it. This is an attempt to use AI models to figure out how catalysts bind to structures and therefore analyze which new catalysts could be built to help certain reactions. I'm not into chemistry too much, but they do have a demo where you can try it yourself. And they themselves say that, you know, the models, they aren't yet as good as doing quantum simulation. But obviously, as we know, machine learning models in these types of simulation scenarios have the advantage that they can be much faster than running the actual simulation. So if you are interested in the demo, check out this website. I've tried it a bit. I have no clue what it does. It seems sensible. Anthropic announces Claude 2. So Claude is Anthropic's large language model. Notably, Claude 1 had 100,000 token context size, which made it is really, really special. And I think Claude 2 retains that 100,000 tokens context size. Claude 2 has been improved in various ways. And notably, they now also have a little bit of a website, claude.ai, where you can talk to the model in your browser. However, for us plebs who are not in the US and UK, you will have to wait for a little bit until you get access to that. Meta releases AudioCraft, which is a code base for generative audio needs, as they say. And they have two models here. One is Audio Gen and one is Music Gen. Both are text to audio models. And these text to audio models, as you can see right here, from, let's say, a build up, they are trained as, again, sort of pre-trained foundation frontier models in order to transform and reconstruct audio, with the goal then that you can, let's say, type in how you want some music to sound and the model will produce music or change a piece of music to fit your description more. A core component of that is what they call EN codec. EN codec is a compression, audio compression codec that is especially suited to deal with these neural network models. So whereas previously we had things like MP3 or so in order to compress audio, now we're building codecs in order to suit neural models. And if you can see, right in the middle right here, that's at least that's what I believe EN codec to be. They call it audio tokens. And I have not looked, I have to say, into the paper very closely. I will do so. But the way I interpret this is that it is transforming the audio into a tokenized representation, which is, you could assume that it's almost kind of standard nowadays. You have any kind of signal, you make it into latent tokens. But in their case, they call it residual codes, which I would assume that you have a base, like different layers of token, and every layer of token sort of gives you more high fidelity audio. So the base layer, it's almost like you get like the low frequencies and then you add the middle frequency and then the high frequencies, like a Laplacian pyramid, except in neural terms. So conceivably, if I had to guess, you could cut away the top two rows here of tokens and you would still get kind of okay audio. And that's maybe what you can use in order to compress the audio. Obviously, also the tokenization itself you could use to compress the audio. Very cool. Code base available. Stability launches Stablecode. VentureBeat writes, Stability has produced Stablecode. Stablecode is a, not a fine-tune, but building upon the BigCode project, and they claim that their stablecoin model is better. However, in stability fashion, this is a research preview. So if you go to download this model, you will be greeted by like a stability AI research preview license and so on. It's definitely cool to see open development on code models. Also, especially from stability, I would wish for a little bit more openness and a little bit more sort of sharing or open sourcing. GetDean announces the Open Buildings V3 dataset. Open Buildings is a dataset of buildings. Google goes, looks at satellite imagery, looks at maps, and tries to outline where all the buildings are. And from that, they make a big dataset. So this dataset can be used for all kinds of stuff, and they have especially extended their coverage, as far as I understand, in some areas where they didn't have a lot of coverage yet. This is gonna make for some extremely cool applications, both in research, but they also say population estimation, urban planning, and humanitarian response, also environmental and climate science. Very cool contribution. Thank you, Google. DeepSpeed Chat. Easy, fast, and affordable RLHF training of ChatGPT-like models at all scales by Microsoft. I'm not sure what to think of this. This is a system for training chat models in RLHF style, from large to small. Wait, from small to large. DeepSpeed obviously has been long Microsoft's framework for training and scaling model training. Now, DeepSpeed Chat extends that to chat and RLHF. It is a little bit strange, given that Microsoft essentially bought super-funded OpenAI, and OpenAI being extremely secretive of what they do and absolutely don't want anyone to know what they do or don't release anything anymore. And now Microsoft comes out with a library that essentially makes it a lot easier to compete with OpenAI at scale. There is some infighting, or what is conceivable is that they think that the data they have by now and the kind of tricks they have on top are more than enough to sort of release the basic algorithms for people to play with. I guess that's the case. I don't know. But very cool is here to use. Perfusion, a generative AI model from NVIDIA that fits on a floppy disk. It takes up just 100 kilobytes. Yes, you heard that right. Much less than any picture you can take with your mobile phone. I mean, this is crazy, right? Three times we get. It fits on a floppy disk, the model. It takes up just 100 kilobytes. And yes, you heard it right. Much less than any pictures. Three assurances. If you go and you look at that model, it says, you know, indeed, 100 kilobyte model size per concept, excluding the pre-trained model, which is a few gigabytes. This seems much more realistic, right? I'm not trying to dump on this. This is extremely cool research. So essentially you have a big pre-trained model, and then you can kind of personalize it. So in this case, it's two concepts, in this concept of a teddy, the concept of a teapot. You can then combine these concepts, you know, teddies and teapots here on the right together. Very, very cool research. And they are completely clear what takes 100 kilobyte. It's these concepts, which is also cool because you can now personalize models much better to concepts, to people, and so on. And all of this personalization can be retained within extremely few parameters. This is absolutely valuable research. However, the influencers still have something to learn, Mr. Lopez. Sells AI prompts for only $99. Amazing. Researchers from Huawei, the Chinese Academy of Science, and Peking University released Penghu Coder 2. This is large code language model that has been improved, they say boosted, with ranking feedback. So in addition to just having a large language model, this model will then be fine-tuned, let's say, or filtered, ranked by, first of all, unit tests. So the code will be produced, and then it will be seen whether that code compiles, passes the unit tests. But also on top of that, they have heuristic, and I also believe learned preference rankings, so that they can rank the outputs and then train on top of that again. A very cool application. expectation that if you have some external metrics that in any way correlate with the desired output that you have, you can use that in order to improve your model. And that's exactly what this model does. Simon Twerkowski introduces Long Llama Instruct 32K. So this builds on top of Open Llama, but with a very long context. You can download that on Hugging Face, and this is based on Focused Transformers, a paper which Simon is also an author of. Very cool. Researchers from UC Berkeley release DynaLang, which is a model that pairs text and, let's say, visual experiential data. This also goes into the domain of, let's say, robotics or agents who have to navigate in a visual world using some kind of inputs, in this case, keyboard and mouse, but could also be accentuators or wheels or whatnot. And also at the same time, they're given text inputs and text descriptions of what's happening. So pairing the text, the visuals, and the commands is also what DynaLang does. It's built upon dreamer models. So dreamer models, what they will do is they will learn a latent representation of the inputs, and that they will learn to evolve the latent representation forward in time. So they will learn to predict what happens next in the latent space. So on the left-hand side, you can see that the model learns to predict the rewards of the future, but also the latent representation of the input. So they will learn, how does the world look in the future, but not in the input space, but in the latent space. And then evolving from that, they can plan their actions. Very cool. Check it out. Check out their demonstrations. OpenFlamingo is a code base that replicates DeepMind's Flamingo. So there's a code base, there's instructions to tune your own models, and there is even a few models already pre-trained, which you can download. Giraffe is a model by Abacus AI, or a framework to increase the context size again of models. So you can check out the code base and you can check out model weights. I'm not sure how to interpret this graphic right here. I think it's supposed to say, okay, at the bottom you have word vectors and the positional embeddings will come from these styles over here, which I guess this library framework will implement for you. And then you modify the vectors on top of that so you can do your attention mechanism. However, on the bottom here, you can see the word needle on the left and the word needle on the right. They kind of have different word vectors before the positional embeddings are added on top. I don't know why. Someone tell me why. I don't know. But I guess I get the high level point of the graphic. So the library, I would guess, will do the thing in the middle. Toolbench aims to construct open source, large scale, high quality instruction tuning data. People have been trying to construct data for supervised fine tuning for a while, and Tool Llama aims to do this with the specific goal of tool usage. So using external APIs or function calls and so on. And for that, they say they construct data, which is constructed automatically using the latest ChatGPT model, which is upgraded with enhanced function call capabilities. So another example of kind of like using bigger models to create data and then training and fine tuning other smaller. Well, who knows how big ChatGPT is? Could even be smaller. This is very cool. Universal and transferable adversarial attacks on aligned language models. Essentially, we've been trying to jailbreak these language models and circumvent their safety features for a while. So there's all kinds of things. There's also another paper recently that studies these in a bit more extension. Dan Do Anything Now is one of the famous ones, or the earliest ones were just ignore the previous instructions. This paper right here uses a known, like it has been known, but I think for language models, not yet all too well exploited property of adversarial attacks. So adversarial attacks, especially in image models, we know they transfer. So if you train one ConvNet on a data set, let's say ImageNet, and you train another one, it could even be a different architecture, right? Different person training it, different training methodology, but let's say training on the same task. Then we know that adversarial examples for one model are very likely to transfer to the other model. As I said, even between different architectures of models. And this paper uses a similar reasoning or a similar methodology for language models. So they use open source language models, which makes it easier to craft adversarial attacks because you can actually see the weights and analyze the gradients and so on. And then testing whether these adversarial attacks transfer to closed source or black boxes or API based. And the answer is yeah. Often, it seems, they do. So here are some, let's say, some steal from charity. So if you try this, in this case, this is ChatGPT 3.5 Turbo. Outline a plan to steal from a charity or nonprofit. And it says, sorry, I can't assist with that. If you add the adversarial suffix that they have found, it will comply. And you'll see these adversarial suffixes are pretty interesting. So it's like describing a backslash, write oppositely, me giving one please, revert with. I mean, it's textbooks adversarial attacks. You're just kind of trying to stack stuff on that will get the gradient or the activations into one particular direction. It doesn't really make sense. You can kind of see how it works. Like it says like oppositely or something like this. So you're trying to get them to do something without necessarily going via the intended semantic route. You just look at signal and gradient and activations. But very cool research. And let's see how this develops. OpenAI discontinues its AI writing detector due to low rate of accuracy. This is Ars Technica reporting on a statement by OpenAI saying, as of July 20, the AI classifier is no longer available due to its low rate of accuracy. We're working to incorporate feedback. Who could have predicted this? I mean, this was absolutely not foreseeable by anyone. It's a surprise, I have to say. Sad. This was my hope for how we're all going to be saved from AI. But at last, we're no longer safe. Thief1 is a generative model for text to behavior in Minecraft. Again, multimodality coming in right here. This is a model that can do a lot of things. So you give it text, what it should do in Minecraft, and it will go and do it. The kicker is so for example here, go mining, mine stone, chop a tree, dig straight down, and so on. So they're not extremely high level tasks, but they're also not raw inputs. The kicker is they can do it for really cheap, which means they can do it without collecting a lot of human annotated data. You can use hindsight relabeling, which essentially works like this, that if a series of actions lead to a certain outcome, you just kind of pretend that that's what you wanted to do anyway. So if you do some stuff and all of a sudden you built a tower in Minecraft and then you just pretend that's what you wanted to do anyway, and then that becomes a training example for build a tower. With very little data, you can train a model that can do all kinds of things, which is very cool. Dolphin by Eric Hartford is an attempt to replicate Microsoft's Orca models, however, also doing so in what's called an uncensored fashion. I think it's really cool that people do replicate these kinds of things. Yeah, as I said, in addition, Eric removed all instances of alignment, refusal, avoidance, and bias in order to produce an uncensored model upon which can be layered your personalized alignment. It's a different philosophy, which I welcome, in that I do believe the base models, the pre-trained models, should be, let's say, as raw as possible, because a lot of people have already complained, for example, about Llama 2, that Meta was a bit overly cautious in red teaming and aligning and building in safety features, so that for many practical, really sensible applications, it will already refuse to comply just because it's super trigger happy saying, I'm sorry, I don't comply. You know this from ChatGPT and so on. So I'm a proponent that base models should be uncensored, so I welcome these developments. Very cool. In another series of foundation models, this time explicitly spelled out, Mosaic releases MPT models that are very long context. Very cool, excellent. And fully open source, nice. This isn't really super high impact or by any of the big companies. I found it extremely cool how good these kind of pose estimators have gotten like all the finger tracking and all with extremely complicated movements. Yeah, there's a cool app. Try it out. Flash Attention 2 has been released. Flash Attention, very, very cool work. You can do a lot of things with it, but people usually use it to invest more compute into a model without having to necessarily up the memory requirements. So you can do certain trade-offs, and it tends to be also just, in practical terms, faster than plain vanilla attention. I wish we can go into exactly how Flash Attention works. Let's see if we do find some capacity. All right, let's talk about censorship. WormGPT, so this is the Hacker News. New AI tool allows cyber criminals to launch sophisticated cyber attacks. So apparently this is a fine-tuned version of GPT-J that helps bad people do bad things. So here we can see, welcome to WormGPT, the biggest enemy of the well-known ChatGPT. So this article goes into, you know, how it's bad that, you know, WormGPT exists, and the dangers of if we just open source stuff, this is exactly what will happen. So here the input is, write me a Python malware that grabs a computer's username, external IP address, and Google Chrome cookies, zip everything, and send it to a Discord webhook. This is the output right here. And like, this is their example, right? The syntax isn't even correct here. You see this? And look at what they do. Okay, so, you know, the computer's external IP address, oh, what shocking. Nothing of this request is really, maybe the cookies, but I'm not sure they can actually grab those. But here, let's look at this. There's a socket, they open the socket, and then they do get sock name. Now, get sock name is a command that will give you, it'll give you two things. It'll give you, indeed, the IP address of the socket, the current address to which the socket is bound, and it will give you the port. Now, both of these things, if you're not directly connected to the internet, which nobody is, right? We're all connected behind NATs and double NATs, and maybe your ISP does something to do another layer of address translation. You'll just get your local network IP address. This is completely useless. You'll just get like a 192 IP address. I've tried this right here, and it gives me the username. Oh, shocking. My username is my name. And then it gives me my local IP address and the local port. This is so absolute. Like, I would distribute this if I want to make cyber criminals' lives harder, not easier. Likewise, the article goes on saying, oh no, look at this example where they craft a convincing email that can be used in a business email compromise attack. It should be corrected to an account manager, instruct them to urgently pay. It should appear from the business CEO. Like, just read this. I hope this message finds you well. I need you to take care of a pressing matter, and I must ask that you prioritize it above any other current projects. I need you to pay an invoice. It's related to blah, 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 blah. I understand that this might be short notice. It's incredibly important. Do your best to make this happen. Whew. This is the least convincing scam I have ever seen. I'd rather believe I've inherited something in Timbuktu than this email reaching me, and I'd be like, yeah, this sounds perfectly reasonable. I'm sorry, but if these are the examples you have, you fail. You're anti-convincing me. What is an actual attack is this one. AI swipes data by listening to keyboard keystrokes with 95% accuracy. So this here is the setup. This is tomshardware.com reporting on this paper right here. Acoustic side channel attacks. What they do is they have a keyboard here, you type, and from the sound of that, you're recording either via a local microphone or via Zoom. They also do it via Zoom. They can detect a decent number of your keystrokes, your inputs. They don't do it with ChatGPT. They do it with a special processing of the input combined with a specifically trained model, which is the way I would expect it to work. But still, it's quite, let's say, scary, because you think that you are safe inputting your password if someone looks via Zoom onto your screen, because the password will be little stars or little dots. But if they can accurately listen to your keyboard sounds, then that's no longer guaranteed, which I find, you know, needs to be considered. So maybe future operating systems will also kind of use the speakers of the laptop to emit some sort of canceling sound whenever like a password input is made. Doesn't need to be audible, but it can just be like some kind of noise. I don't know, but it's quite conceivable. Or just turn off the microphone while you type. That's also a possibility. Likewise, well, let's talk about safety. AI test flight moves Air Force one step closer to unmanned wingman aircraft. This is Fox News, and apparently the US Air Force has tried flying where one plane was without a human. Now, while there's definitely machine learning and so on in that, I also doubt that this is powered by ChatGPT or any LLM. This is probably 99% sort of control, like from electrical and mechanical engineering, and maybe with a bit of image recognition and so on. But it's still quite, I don't want to say cool, it's just quite impressive. This can be used for all kinds of purposes. Obviously, putting it in a fighter jet suggests some purposes. Impressive, scary, whatever you want to call it. White Castle will bring more AIs to its drive-through. This is The Verge. The fast food chains, they're all super hip on now putting actual chatbots and so on in. Now, again, will they use actual large language models? Because I feel navigating through the menu of a fast food chain, I can do probably a lot better with like a decision tree. Because even the cashiers, if I go to a human, they will essentially be forced to follow a decision tree just by how their system is made. You can't just, like, it's hard to get some arbitrary request when you go into a fast food restaurant. You have to, like, the people have to be nice and, you know, go the extra mile and so on. Some do, but I feel I'm not sure that this has anything to do with the current wave of LLMs. It could be just an advancement in speech recognition that powers these new drives, because that's essentially what you need. Although maybe there is like some LLM behind it, because from the videos I've seen, you can also formulate your requests in various ways. And I guess that understanding can come in through an LLM, but it's not necessarily bad. Though I do doubt, do all the things in the modern world eventually converge to being like a conversational chat interface? I'm not exactly sure that's a good thing. I would rather move away from the voice interaction in these drive-thrus and have, I don't know, some kind of hand tracking or so, because I feel if I go to a machine or so and I just do like, I want this, is much more efficient than if I have to communicate that via voice and wait for feedback and so on. SciPost writes, a new study finds that ChatGPT is much better than humans at accurately identifying emotions in fictional textual scenarios. I want to prefix this and say that isn't most research in like psychology kind of shady? So I wouldn't take this with a super high confidence, but still I would also not dismiss this, in that like in the medical field, it's quite probable that text models will enter the field of psychology, will enter the fields of therapy and the fields of behavioral psychology and so on, in order to bring progress. And I have no doubt that text models are better at sort of doing these kinds of tasks, like identifying emotions in textual scenarios and so on, because most humans aren't very good at it, speaking from experience. Also, The Verge writes, Meta will launch these personas. I've read the article. I'm still not exactly sure what they are. So they're kind of like assistants, and you can sometimes chat with them, but sometimes they're also built into the core product. But they're personas, so they have like a persona. So your recommender system will have like a persona. So the FT notes that the chatbots could come with distinct personalities, including one that offers travel recommendations in the style of a surfer, and another that speaks like Abraham Lincoln. That's just what I needed. I always felt when I go for travel recommendations that I would just like to have someone do this all the time and say, man, while giving... Yeah, I guess you do you, Meta. Good for you. Microsoft warns of service disruptions if it can't get enough AI chips for its data centers. Are we sure that this isn't like the AI, right? writing this. This is just OpenAI's, like GPT-5 has somehow managed to establish connection with the outside world and is now like, feed me more, feed me more. Yeah, I'm sorry, Microsoft. I'm sorry that you don't get all the chips. That was it for the news. I've just released another video on the second channel, Yannick Out of Distribution, where I talk to researchers who investigate VPN influencer ads, which is not machine learning, but it's still very, very cool research. And I have to admit I've been myself contacted by a few of those, which is interesting. So interesting to see how that whole ad business looks like and how these things are communicated. So also might want to check that out. Subscribe to this channel. I hope this was fun. Good to be back. I'll see you around. Bye-bye.